Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Black Tower Podcast. I am Andrew.
And I'm Aaron.
And it's great to have you here again for our official second episode. We're going to go ahead and get the spoiler warning here out of the way. This episode will contain selected portions from several books of the Wheel of Time series. If you have not read the entire series, there's obviously a danger of things being spoiled for you in the future. So if you're not down for that, again, we recommend things like the White Tower Podcast, WOT Pod Through, those kind of guys for that chapter by chapter type analysis. But we will have spoilers here.
I'm down for that.
I'm always down for it. It's a great podcast.
We wanted to take a second here and talk about the response that we've had to last week's episode about sexism in the Wheel of Time and some of the more controversial aspects of what gets written about. And we were just completely overwhelmed and taken aback by how many people listened and how many people were willing to get on Twitter or Facebook or just email us and say, hey, I love the episode, or hey, you know, this was maybe not the best way to say what you said or whatever. My point is the feedback was overwhelming and way more than we had ever hoped for.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was fantastic to see all the people saying like, oh, we're excited to see hear or listen to your first official podcast, and all the responses that we got back to it. Just great stuff. I know I sent out a tweet using the Black Tower Twitter asking you guys for themes that you love and hate. And I've got a list here of them. And when we discuss them, if they come up in the discussion, of course, we'll credit the guys that gave those. But I'm looking at 6 or 7 different people that have given several little tidbits here. So like I tweeted out after that, you know, we are listening. And if you don't get an immediate response, generally it's because I'm saving the notifications to keep it tracked in our little log of viewer and fan feedback. But we are paying attention. We are listening. We are reading your responses to what we say. And, you know, we're taking it to heart as well, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. I've seen actually a lot of people responding to each other and to us on Twitter, especially, and a lot of what they're saying.
Such a great fan base.
It's kind of opened my eyes to what other people think about Wheel of Time and what other people think about the issues that are there.
For sure.
Some of them have just been hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Mostly they're serious.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic stuff. I love reading all of it. Brightens my day. So, but we decided that a good topic for the second episode was going to be the Murdral.
Because what's the first thing we see in the books?
We don't know what it is when we see it, but we find out later that it is, in fact, one of the Murdral. They've got several aliases or different names from different cultures. You know, the wolves call them the Neverborn. The IL call them the Night Runners. See, I paid attention, said I was pronouncing it wrong. Hopefully I fixed it. The IL. It's called a Fade and Andor, a Fetch and Ilion, a Lurk and Tear. It's also commonly known as just Shadowmen, the Eyeless, Halfmen, as a throwback or a call to kind of what they are. They're half men, half shadow spawn, essentially. It's half, not really Trolloc, but like the motive and mentality kind of behind a Trolloc, minus the berserkerness. Is that a word?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what anime you watch.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. So a lot of the Wheel of Time companion book has a lot of great write-ups on pretty much everything. I haven't been able to not find something in the companion yet. So we use that as a good resource for a good synopsis of what a Murdral is. And it details that they're the spawn of Trollocs, but that the taint of evil is even stronger in them. They normally appear to be kind of taller men, over 6 feet, with pale, pasty white complexion. Any hair they have is going to be black, flat, thin, pale lips, no eyes, no eyebrows, nothing even showed that those should be features they have. But even without the eyes, they still see like eagles in day or night. Their powers and abilities stem directly from Shaitan, from the Dark One. They're no match for an Aes Sedai, but they can best most warriors. As we see throughout the series, most men are afraid to fight them. Their look generally inspires fear and inspires fear in men. And they've been seen throughout the entire series. They move really sinuously, gracefully, almost like serpent in style. They've got superior senses of smell and a weakness for some odors, some they just can't resist. They can become all but invisible in shadows, and they have a trick of seeming to be able to vanish even when they were right there. We found out that they can travel from shadow to shadow, and even the Forsaken don't understand exactly how they do this. And they have the ability to cloak themselves and their mounts in silence, as we see in the first real encounter between Rand and the Murdral, when he sees it galloping back and forth on the road, but there's no sound. Even the wind doesn't disturb its cloak. They loathe deep water, just like Trollocs, and can't swim. They cannot channel, but they can detect the channeling of either sex in the series, whether it's a male or a female. And they have greater range than the Forsaken with that ability, but they're very dependent on the level of the One Power or the amount of the One Power that's being used. They can detect the residues of channeling at fainter levels than humans, though they're unable to tell what it is, with the exception of, I'm probably going to butcher this name too, but Shaidar Haran is a very notable, noteworthy Murdral that stands above the rest. Several of our listeners, I'm sure, will remember the name and be like, oh, that guy.
Yeah, that's how I would have said it.
Yeah. Murdral can link with a number of Trollocs and override their bestial nature and take control of their mind and their mentality and their desires, and create a well-disciplined fighting force. However, if a Murdral is linked with Trollocs and is killed or dies, the Trollocs that share the link die as well. But there are Shadow Spawn that they cannot control, like the worms that we see whenever Rand and the main party are heading off towards the Eye of the World. The Murdral and Trolloc weapons are forged in Thakandar. Someone will correct me. But that's a frog. That's a frog? Yeah, it's enshrouded in frogs. It's a fog-enshrouded valley below the slopes of Shao Ghul in the Blasted Lands. It's described as being bitter cold and dry as a desert where no life can be sustained. It runs east to west, with Shao Ghul at the westernmost end and a mountain pass to the east. And it's most noteworthy for all the warfare it saw during the last battle. The swords they carry are similar to those of the power wrought blades, though they're not quite as sturdy. They're dipped in a black river that runs through Thakandar, which gives their edge a lethal corrupting effect, as we see with the wound that Rand's father, Tam, sustains in the Eye of the World. Even a slight scratch is usually fatal unless an Aes Sedai is present to heal the injury. The forging of the blades also requires a single living human. The execution of the victim with the blade itself completes the forging. It's not exactly clear how, but it seems like the blade has to be quenched in the body or the blood of the victim. As we've seen, this is a slight example here and there. And many victims of raids on the Borderlands are taken to Thakandar to serve as sacrifices for the weapons made there. All Murdral are male, and while not sterile, they cannot reproduce with Trollocs or humans. And I think that's pretty much it.
Makes me think, basically, then you are sterile.
Yeah, it's essentially sterile. I mean, it's really weird. Like, they can still perform the functions, but it's like after having a vasectomy. Like, it's there, but it doesn't do anything.
That's interesting, because I think maybe that was a point added later because of some of the activities that Robert Jordan wrote for the Myrdal to get up to with some of their female captives.
Yeah, probably. That sounds about right.
You can't just have half Myrdal, half human babies running around.
And I mean, I guess there is the thought that because there have been, maybe they could reproduce with humans, but or shadow spawn, but really can't. But that's an overview of the Murdrawl, really. So I think I pretty much covered everything.
Yeah, I think you got most of it. If not, we'll get tweets.
Oh yeah, and then we'll address it later on.
So, I kind of wanted to outline, big picture, like throughout the series, where do we see the Murdrawl and what are they doing? And for the first time that we see them, I wanted to read the text right from the book because, I mean, clearly, if I was any good of a writer, I'd be writing books and not talking about them. But this is what Robert Jordan wrote. He wrote, "He glanced over his shoulder and blinked. Not more than 20 spans back down the road, a cloaked figure on horseback followed them. Horse and rider alike, black, dull, and ungleaming. The rider's cloak covered him to his boot tops. The cowl tugged well forward, so no part of him showed. Vaguely, Rand thought there was something odd about the horseman, but it was the shadowed opening of the hood that fascinated him. He could see only the vaguest outlines of a face, but he had the feeling he was looking right into the rider's eyes, and he could not look away. Queasiness settled in his stomach. There was only shadow to be seen in the hood, but he felt hatred as sharply as if he could see a snarling face. Hatred for everything that lived. Hatred for him most of all. For him above all things." Abruptly, Rand realized what had been odd about the horseman, aside from his bags, aside from his being there at all. The wind that beat at Tam and him had not so much as lifted a fold of the black cloak. His mouth was suddenly dry. And I think this introduction to this mysterious rider is also serves to show that, like, Rand is basically scared shitless.
Oh yeah, for sure.
He's like, he's fallen all over himself. He doesn't know what's going on. His dad Tam believes, "Oh yeah, I'm sure you saw something, but it can't have possibly been what you described." Yeah,
I think Tam. I don't think Tam fully believes him at first.
Not until they get into the village and other kids his age are reporting things.
Because take Tam's history from being a prominent figure in the companions from Ilion, and he's probably encountered something like this before, having traveled in the IL Wars and been close to the Blasted Lands. There's probably no doubt that he's at least talked with people, at the very least, that have faced or seen Fades on the battlefield. And to think how
he knows a little bit. He knows a little bit to separate the fact from the fiction.
And to think that one of those would be this far south is just, it's almost unbelievable. It'd be like walking out your back door and seeing a polar bear, and then you look back and it's gone, and nobody believes that you saw it until, you know, five other kids say, "Yeah, we saw a polar bear," and you're living in like South Carolina or Florida or like Brazil or something. Like, you're like, "No, there's no way." And so I think it was more that kind of like disbelief of that nature rather than the you're just seeing things. But then he couldn't deny it once they got to Edmondsfield and everybody was like, "Yeah, my son said he saw this." "Well, wait, my son said it too." And Tam's like, "Oh, fuck. That can't be good.
We're going home.
Because immediately after that, like, they start setting, don't they start asking or toying with the idea of like having some kind of patrol or guards to kind of be on the watch for like the suspicious guard, or at least asking around when they see someone suspicious.
Yeah, I think it was after the attack.
Well, I think after the attack, when they started the roaming patrols. But I think it was before you could see Tam wanted to get away because he was like, "Okay, this is not good. We need to get back and make sure our house is safe." Because we saw him. He wanted us to see him.
And I think a question I had here, I want to address this to our people who are listening, because I can't find any reference or writings about it, but we see throughout the series that wolves are good, right? Everybody's like, wolves are good. Perrin's associated with the wolves. The wolves talk to Perrin, and they're, the wolves are considered a force for good. But in the beginning of this first book, there's a whole section about how the wolves are sneaking into people's farms and killing the sheep. They're killing all the sheep, and they're breaking into people's barns and messing stuff up. But then we we find later that that's what the Trollocs did to Rand's farm, Rand and Tam. And nobody seems to think it's worth mentioning that maybe it was the Trollocs this whole time that have just been fucking up everybody's sheep.
You know, I never thought of that.
Well, I'm sure somebody else has thought of it, but...
But yeah, I could see that.
It's not like I'm having an original idea.
Because think about it, like, look at this as you would almost like the backcountry south where, you know, you've got no neighbor for 10 miles. Everybody knows everybody by the first name. The town population on a peak day is over like 55. You know, I mean, obviously Evansville is a little bit bigger than that, I would imagine, at least in the couple hundred people. But all these stories are just like, you know, growing up and your mom telling you about the boogeyman. Or stories like Santa, like, he knows when you're awake, he knows when you're sleeping, the stalker, you know, all that kind of stuff. So all these children,
some fat white guys watching me while I'm
saying
sleeping.
Ho, ho, ho. Thanks, while Mom. Doing it. It's fucking creepy.
Thanks, Mom.
But, all these, they've been told stories of Trollocs and Fades and the flying creature, the Drakir, I think is how it's said. Without seeing the word, I'm hopeless at pronouncing it. I'm hopeless at pronunciating the entire English language anyway. But so these are all stories. So it's not even in their mind that it's something other than wolves. They're like, well, we're surrounded by woods. It's been a harsh winter. There's probably not a lot of hunting left for them. It's got to be wolves. What else would be tearing our livestock to shreds and breaking into barns and killing people, never to be seen again? You know, it's one of those cases where, you know, generally the simplest answer is the right answer, but it may not have been.
Right. It was just when I was doing show prep for this, it jumped out at me and I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, that is.
The Trollocs killed everybody's wolves.
Killed everybody's wolves. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
They killed all the sheep. Wolves.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Although they do hate each other.
We find that out. That's another one of, speaking of something that Lan has told us, that brings to mind Lan's lesson in the Eye of the World. I believe it's around chapter 8 or so, that Lan tells the reader, or he tells the Emmon Fielders, but, you know, by the virtue of the device, tells the reader too, that only the weakest Aes Sedai would fail to be a match for a Fade, one against one. But that many good men and true had fallen to them. And he tells Rand not to feel bad that he was scared, because the look of the eyeless is fear. And then he and Moraine, he admits, both failed to kill the one that was leading the attack on the village, stating that half-men have the Dark One's own luck. That whole thing is actually a very loaded statement that tells us a lot about the Myrdral in and of itself. You know, it hails to their gaze having the power to instill fear. It talks about their link with the Dark One himself. And it talks about their strength, that if you can channel and use the power and you're, you know, not super weak, generally you're fine against a singular Fade. But all, you know, several men, trained men with good arms, you know, swords, shield and everything, have fallen to the Fades over time. So it definitely hails back to how lethal of a force the Myrdral really are.
Yeah, and you know, and then Lan admits that he didn't even kill the one that was there.
That was a bit of a pride punch for him.
Maybe. Yeah, it's kind of taking a a little bite of crow pie and there.
Last king of the Malkiri didn't defeat a Fade. Like, that's gotta hurt him. Because he's, you know, he grew up in the borderlands fighting and being trained to fight these things. And he's like, man, I couldn't even manage to kill one last night. I must have gotten weak or rusty or something.
Right. And I think it's stated somewhere else that his it's like his personal life's mission is like a war with the Blight, with the shadows.
I think
on,
it's
basically
because later on, whenever who do they get to tell Rand and them all about Lan? Or is it, do they tell Nynaeve? I think they tell Nynaeve, about his history, about him being, you know, the last king of the Malkiri, you know, a crowned battle lord. I believe it's battle lord, right? Or a diademed battle lord, I think. You know, lord of the seven towers, being, you know, the seven notable towers of what made up the Malkiri stronghold. And she tells him that, you know, that during that battle, that the way they thought was that if we can't defeat the foe, we can always avenge it. So it's like his lifelong mission is to avenge the loss of his kingdom. And there's really no end to that mission unless, you know, the shadow is ultimately completely defeated.
Yeah, without giving away the end of the book or the end of the series. It's kind of a never-ending battle. Well, skipping ahead a couple chapters, we're kind of following this thread. They talk a lot about the Myrdal in the first couple books, and then it fades out afterwards. But in 17, 18, and 19 of The Eye of the World, we see a Fade who I believe is Shaedar Haran approaches Rand at the Stag and the Lion in Barillon. It's like Rand is having a good time. He's dancing with all the girls. I think he actually does dance with all of the women that are part of the party. He finds himself dancing with Aes Sedai,
stumbling and shit.
The Village Wisdom. His girlfriend, who he breaks up with later, but finds himself dancing with all these girls, maybe even a pretty serving girl or two. But he's kind of reeling from that, and he's walking down the hall next to the kitchen, I believe, and he bumps right into the Fade in the hallway, who mentions kind of almost accidentally that Rand is one of the ones that he's looking for. And again, Rand runs back to his room and puts on his brown pants. Really, he gets saved by Lan. I think there's some people running towards him in the hallway, and there's some swords come out, and the Fade kind of turns sideways and disappears, which is fucking scary. Then we see them over the next couple chapters really leading this intense and systematic search through the countryside of the Trollocs, trying to catch all three of our Tar Viren, Rand, Matt, and Perrin. And the Myrdal who caught him in the inn, or cornered him, kind of actually was trying to question him about where the other three were. And I believe at this point, the Dark One was wanting to capture whoever it was that was the dragon, and nobody knew who it was. But he was trying to capture him so that he could turn him and use him.
Yeah, I think he wanted all three of them just to be safe.
Right. Because they all three definitely have their own influences and powers.
Yeah, they definitely do. He's like, well, you know, screw it. Instead of risking getting the wrong one, let's just take all three and we'll sort it out later. Yeah.
Might as well.
So from that point, the sightings get kind of a few and random in the Eye of the World. We see further on in chapter 26 when they're in Whitebridge, one of the more notable scenes, I think, from the Eye of the World is they actually managed to notice a Fade approaching them through the crowd in Whitebridge. The crowd is parting ways, seemingly subconsciously giving this cloaked figure coming towards them a wide berth, or just kind of avoiding him. And they realize immediately what it is. And Tom, seeing what's going on and seeing that Ran and Matt are scared shitless, takes and throws his harp case with his harp in it and his flute case and his cloak and everything that's all bundled up to them and tells them to run. And he does his typical fancy flourish, pulls out his knives and dives at the Fade and attacks the Fade, who is written as the Fade is startled that Tom has launched himself at the Fade.
Right.
And as the boys take off and run, they hear Tom scream, and we're left for a while not knowing what's happened. We find out later that this becomes the origin of Tom's limp that is characteristic of him for the rest of the series, that he got it from this battle with the Fade. I believe he tells the boys that, yeah, he was injured and has been limping ever since and trying to recover, you know, probably why it's been so long since he's caught up to him and everything.
Right. This is the point where Tom's character turned for me. Before this, I wasn't sure how I felt about him. Other people have mentioned that they feel like he might be a little sexist or misogynistic or whatever, but I didn't feel that way. I just felt like he was a little shady, a little secretive, and I wasn't sure how to take it. And then he pulls this out of his hat. And I don't know how you see it, but in my mind, it's like he just launches into this like spinning 780 degree spin with knives kind of flinging out.
Yeah. Have you seen the movie, The Men Who Stare at Goats?
Yeah, I love that movie.
You mean the guy that, do you remember the guy that developed technique where he like crosses his arms with knives and then like he just screams and dives at somebody and tries to stab him?
Yeah.
That's kind of how I pictured it. Just this full-on battle cry. Just, ah!
Yeah, that's a great movie.
Oh, it's such a good movie. Want to watch it again. Anyway. But yeah, I think it was a really big turning point for the reader's perception of Tom, because prior to this, you know, we start getting an inclination that he's very knowledgeable. We learn that Gleeman travel all over, so we kind of get the sense that he should be at least a little bit cultured and experienced in the world and the ways of the world. And here we get to see Tom be essentially completely selfless, that for whatever reason, this Glee man who just met these country bumpkins, I believe at this point he's seen that there is something to him, that they are important as much as he dislikes the Aes Sedai and wants nothing to do with them, that they are important enough for him to risk his own life for. And some of that also could be the bond that he's built with them, you know, being on Baldomin's ship, teaching them how to play the harp and the flute and the juggle. Well, not the harp, because he said that farm boys' hands are too daft for the harp.
Yeah.
But I think they pick up a little bit on the harp anyway. But teaching them the flute and how to juggle and entering the crew and just dealing with them and being around them, I think he kind of takes them on as almost like nephews, for good reason, as we learn about his nephew and what happened there. Later on in Camelin. But that kind of in-depth is probably better saved for maybe a topic on Tom.
Yeah, I think there's probably a whole episode just on Tom.
We could probably do a whole episode on just about every character, right? Just about. So then we see when you get towards the end of the Eye of the World, they've made it to the Eye of the World. Rand finds himself in this weird locked battle struggle between one of the Forsaken. I forgot to write down their names. I think one was like Agnor and I can't remember the other one. Because Agnor, I believe, is the one that burns himself out trying to pull too much right. of the pure, what is it, Side-In?
The True Source?
Was it True Source? I thought it was Concentrated Side-In, the male half of the power.
Oh, the Eye of the World. Yeah.
Yeah, the actual Eye of the World itself. It's Concentrated male half of the One Power, Side-In.
Without the Dark One's taint.
Well, without the Dark One's taint, there's no Dark One booty hole on this here magic.
We need a sound effect or something that we can trigger every time we have to talk about the Dark One's taint.
I feel like the obvious juvenile sound to have is just like the like fart box noise, or we could just have like someone that, like with a super deep voice, just like the Dark One's taint. But I believe Agnor is the one that he burns himself out trying to pull all of Side-In away from Rand once he realizes what's going on and burns himself out in doing so. And then Rand does battle with the other Forsaken that I know I'm going to get displeased tweets about not remembering the name. But in this struggle, we see Balzamon that shows Rand a vision of Fates torturing his mother and everything. And for Rand, having this deep love for his mother, having what little memories of his mother he has, along with this so far book-long struggle of who am I, sees the person that's, hey, that's my mom, being tortured by the first evil creature he's seen in the series. It's devastating for him. And you get to see Rand for the first time, really, really in action. And he burns the Fates away. And it's implied that in doing so, he's freed his mother. Although it's never cemented whether or not that was a true vision or an illusion from Balzamon, or whether she was fully freed or not. She states that she's now free and can rest in peace. But we never see any 100% clarification on that I can recall. But that's another illustration of the Fates.
I think looking at it, I read it again last night, and it was there was some things in it that made me think it was more vision and less reality. Mm-hmm. The description of the actual mirror draw, the Fades, were kind of nightmarish, like even more so than they actually are. They had pinchers for hands, like crab hands and blades instead of hands, and all this stuff that was just like something out of a horror movie, out of like a The Hills Have Eyes or something.
The Hills Have Eyes meets Saw or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just made me think that Balzamon was trying to mess with him. He was trying to make him mad, trying to make him slip, so that he could like win his loyalty, and he was trying to make him like a disciple at this point.
Yeah, I think so.
Because it's like he burns the Fades with almost like a flaming sword.
Yeah,
and Balzamon is pissed. He's like, you can't channel that much of the power yet. Not until I've taught you how. Which proves makes wrong. Me think his goal here is to try and
because I think he even says like, if you kneel, this will all stop and she'll be safe and you'll both be in bliss under the shroud of the Dark One.
Yeah, it might have worked for somebody else. It did work for some other people.
Yeah,
it did, but not for Rand.
Yeah,
it's just the best way to piss him off.
Yeah, it really turned out to be. And really solidifies, I think, Rand's resolve to fight Balzamon in the shadow to keep his mother
safe. It's funny, happens. Though, the whole time he keeps denying him like it's some kind of a dream. And somebody told him at one point that if you deny the Dark One in a dream, he doesn't have any power over you. And he's thought that Balzamon this whole time was the Dark One.
Yeah. And that's a very Christian concept. You know, if you just deny demons and the devil, they can't touch you.
He keeps saying, I deny you, I deny you.
And Balzamon's just like, deny me all you want. I'm right still here. Like, doesn't work that way, sonny boyo.
Yeah.
You wool-headed farm boy.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So that's the last we see of the Fates for the Eye of the World. And we're not going to go through every instance of seeing them. Just a couple towards the beginning. We see them again pretty early on in Chapter 6 of the Great Hunt. Iktar intervenes with the Fate that confronts Rand and Valdara. And basically does the same thing that Tom did back in the Eye of the World. And is like, just go. I got this. And then again, yeah, ultimately the Fade winds up escaping. And then we go a little bit further into chapters 10 and 11. And you find, Iktar and his company find a Fade filleted and nailed to a door. And it is discovered that Padan Fain, that greasy motherfucker, killed the Fade that was competing with him for control of a band of Trollocs. Because Fain wasn't scary enough already.
Right.
This motherfucker just killed a Fade. He killed a Murdrol. Just because he was competing with him for control over a group of Trollocs. Like, that's terrifying.
I feel like we could also say, because he wanted to.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Because at this point, Padan Fain just does what he does because he wants to. So, and that's something that, you know, Iktar failed to do, which by his reputation, you would think he would stand a chance. But, well, apparently, you know, not saying that he couldn't kill the Fade, but, you know, the Fade did escape him, but not Padan Fain.
But did the Fade really escape Iktar, or was something else going on? Because we find out later that Iktar is a dark friend. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, that's true. I'd honestly forgotten about that part.
Yeah.
It looked like he escaped, but in reality, he let him go.
Yeah. So, after that, we see in the prologue for the Dragon Reborn, there's a whole section kind of introducing the White Cloaks better, because before this, it had just been the White Cloaks this or the White Cloaks that, or those bloody flaming White Cloaks. We see Jakim Karadin getting kind of dressed down by the Lord Commander of the White Cloaks, and he afterwards is in his quarters. He's mad. He's trying to figure out where Rand is, and a Myrdral appears like it just came out of the shadows, like out of the corner of his eye, and it kind of lends weight to this myth that we've heard from several people now, that they can travel using shadows. And I thought it was just like backwoods country bumpkin folklore. Like, oh, they're 20 feet tall and shoot lightning bolts out of their eyes, and they could travel between shadows. And I almost wonder if it's some form of traveling. Like, is this some like true power, Dark One's magic form of traveling?
That would be my thought. That's what I was about to bring up. That would be my thought, that because really no one gets to touch the true source, especially, you know, well, nobody at this point in the book that we're aware of, or the series rather, that seeing that even the Forsaken by and large don't understand it, and it's implied that the true source, if you pull from just the true source, that it works very, well, not very differently, but it works differently from the One Power.
Right.
As we see that people that use the true source, they don't see or sense that they're channeling. And they do it because it's coming pseudo from a different source.
Right. And we know that this particular Fade is Shaidar Haran, yeah, which means Hand of the Dark. and he's kind of the extension of the Dark One's will in our world, or Rand's world, however you want to think of it.
Randland. Some people have come to affectionately call it
Randland.
I feel maybe like not so affectionate.
That's a bit reductionist. Like, it's not just Rand's, not just Rand's land. Many other people sacrificed a lot of other things.
That is very true.
I always thought it was kind of too simple to just call it Randland.
Yeah, that's fair. I'd agree with you on that one.
So the Fade steps out of a shadow. It lets us know that Carden is a dark friend. I think this is only mention of the fact that the mirror draw is blurry in a reflection, which makes me wonder how much they're actually in our world. How much are they part in?
Are they like part ethereal?
Yeah, are they part? That would explain like
that would explain like kind of the fear from their gaze, how they can move shadow to shadow, how they can seem to disappear in plain sight. Maybe they are part ethereal. Maybe they're, you know, maybe they have kind of that, I don't know what you call it, like not fourth dimension aspect, but that kind of I'm here, but not really here. Or maybe them disappearing in plain view is kind of them lending more to their a potentially ethereal side.
Yeah, out of phase, you might call it. They're kind of shifted out of our reality a little bit.
So talking about Shadir Haran, I pulled out the companion entry on him since we have mentioned him and he is a Murdral.
Right.
It's worth mentioning. So like you've already said, his name is Old Tongue for Hand of the Dark. And it was a name given to him because he's a Murdral, unlike all others. His name is actually in the Old Tongue, where all the other Murdral names had names in the Trolloc Tongue. He was a head and shoulders taller than all other half-men. He was arrogant, commanded the Forsaken, and displayed a dark sense of humor, and could see the difference between Sidin and Sidair. That's a huge distinction already, because we find out that the Murdral have no sense of humor. They're just sadistic. And he can tell the difference between whether it's a male or female side of the one power that's being used. He carried the authority of the Dark One to the extent that it was permitted to punish Mokhedain and
Mogedion.
Yeah, there you go. Mogedion and is it Messana? M-E-S-A-A-N-A. Yeah. Well, it almost sounds like John Cena. But he was able to punish Messina and Mogedion. I'm never going to say that name right. But he was able to punish them very severely for their failures. He did not have nearly as much power as the Dark One, but the Dark One was able to project a shadowy form of himself onto Shadir Haran. And if he was away from Shao Gul for too long, Shadir Haran grew very weak until he was ultimately discarded when Rand went into the Pit of Doom. Yeah, leaving a husk on the ground and creating a large void. So he's definitely very influential later on. I remember reading him and like, how is a Murdral telling the Forsaken what to do and berating them and punishing them for failures? Like, I think the theory is, or a theory that I've read or heard, is that he was actually sort of like an avatar for Shaitan to walk around on the earth. And that would explain why, if he was gone from Shao Gul for too long because of the seal in the Dark One's prison, that he would start growing weak.
Yeah. That theory makes sense to me anyways.
Yeah, I think it does. But I think that's really all I have to say on the Murdral.
I think my biggest point with trying to track certain instances of them through these books, and then knowing that later in the series we see more and more of them at a time, and more of them get killed, especially by, I think Perrin probably has the biggest mirror draw body count.
I think so.
Of anybody. I'd have to look that up to see who killed the most. But it's like there's this they progressively get less and less scary and less powerful through the books. And maybe their power over us is their fear. And at the beginning, it's like they are so scary that people, they can't move, or they fall over and they wet themselves just thinking about them. And towards the end of the book, it's like, oh yeah, 100 mirror draw this, and Perrin just starts lopping off heads, and Rand's like electrocuting them with force lightning.
Yeah.
And
I think it also might just be like a comparative thing, as the group grows in strength, and the Murdral really aren't getting stronger because they're already created as what they are, that it's easy to think or see where they seem to be weaker versus just the party itself growing stronger. And with the seeing stronger and stronger foes, it kind of dilutes down the initial, like, what the fuck is this from the Murdral?
True. True. I also wanted to take a minute at the end here to mention that, especially with anything introduced in the first book, The Eye of the World, we kind of compare it to the work of Tolkien, and we go, how is this a parallel to Tolkien, anything that he's written? And I feel like he almost invented the Myrdral as a direct parallel to the Uruk-hai, and the Trollocs as a parallel to the orcs from the Lord of the Rings. And everything kind of evolves from there and goes its own way. But the first book is very Tolkienian. Is that a word? I don't know.
It's a word now.
It is now. We just made it a word.
Okay, the Black Tower was known for like having strong male channelers, as the women of the Wheel of Time have said. We're all wool-headed here.
Yeah.
So
I do tend to think with the hair on my chest.
Oh, yeah. What can I say? I'm just a wool-headed farm boy. Yeah. Pronunciation is going to forever be at least my downfall.
Well, and speaking of pronunciation, there's been a lot. We complain that people are going to complain about us on Twitter, but really it's been the opposite. And there's been a lot of support and a lot of people saying, yeah, I didn't know how to pronounce it either. I still don't. And there's been even some people saying, you know what, just pronounce it wrong and own it. Just say it and we know what you're talking about.
Yeah, fair enough.
So that's kind of the mentality I'm going to have from this point on, is I'm going to do my best to pronounce things the right way, but if I mess it up, I'm sorry, and I've apologized for it already.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
All right.
But I think that's a good segue into the ending here. A little bit shorter than the last episode, but I think we definitely covered a subject, I feel, in depth. I think a lot of people, especially as the book series goes on, tend to overlook the importance of the Murdral and exactly what they are and why they should still be considered as a significant obstacle later on. And there's some stuff from them that, you know, if you read an instance here, read an instance there, you don't really get, or it doesn't piece together maybe. I know some of this didn't piece together for me.
Right.
But hopefully this is either help somebody understand the Murdral better, or somebody is like sitting there like, yes, I thought the same thing. Or maybe, you know, you don't agree with something we've said about the Murdral, or have some insight into something that we maybe overlooked or didn't see. As always, we encourage that kind of feedback. You can hit us up on Twitter, obviously, at Tower Podcast.
Yeah, it's Twitter is at Tower Podcast. On Instagram, we are Black Tower Pod. If you have questions, concerns, episode ideas, gripes, complaints, anything, email us at blacktowerpod@gmail.com. And we are on Facebook at Black Tower Pod. So pretty much anywhere.
Yeah. So with that, I think I speak for Aaron and myself. Well, I know I speak for myself, but I think I speak for Aaron as well. I want to say we greatly appreciate all the feedback we've gotten. You guys listening to what we're saying, giving that great feedback, and just being active in the community. It's very exciting for us, and we look forward to doing many more podcasts that hopefully address things that you guys have thought about or curious about or just feel like should or need to be talked about.
Yeah, I absolutely look forward to doing some episodes that are at least inspired by ideas that come from people who are out there in the community listening and reading the books and listening to other people's podcasts. And yeah, I think it's an exciting time to be a part of this community, and I'm just glad that we've been accepted.
Agreed. So again, these podcasts are published on Fridays. Is there any podcast platform we have not been able to
not that get I in know on? Of. If we're not on your favorite podcast platform, let us know and we'll make sure we get there.
Yeah, but I know we're on Spotify, we're on the Google Podcast, we're on iTunes now. Podbean link still works, of course. I know I've been able to find us on the app I use from my phone whenever I want to listen, which is Podcast Addict.
Yep. And a lot of those podcasts pull their RSS feeds from Google. It's just once you get on the major ones, it kind of filters out to all of the kind of specific apps that people use.
Gotcha. Well, I think with that, it is time to say goodbye, and we will see you guys on the various social media, and again, when the next podcast comes out. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.